everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. We've got a gigantic show for you. We're going to be starting off in just a little bit talking about multiple allegations of inappropriate behavior coming in at former Vice President Joe Biden, as well as just a little bit of the polling. It's still early to be talking about polls, but I did notice one interesting thing that I want to break down on that. One of the big differentiators between support for Joe Biden and for Bernie Sanders, the two leading candidates in most of the polls that I've seen. We're going to be closing out the show with Meanwhile In, taking a look at interesting news from around the world. We've got some good ones. And we've also got two great guests that are going to be joining us. So a little bit later on, Ken Klippenstein of TYT Investigates. He's got one of his Freedom of Information Act requests has turned up possible legal action against an organization and a person that I don't like talking about on this show, but bad things might be coming down the road for them, so we're going to talk about them. And you'll have to wait a little bit to find out who it actually is. I'm going to minimize how many times I have to say that person's name, if possible. In just a little bit, we've got Vicki Ward, author and investigative journalist, is going to be on to talk about her new book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, and Corruption. We're going to try to learn a little bit about Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. And in the middle of the show, Tucker Carlson has been on a tear recently on the Green New Deal, Chris Hayes, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and so we're going to be talking about that. And if we have time, Jeanine Pirro is auditioning for the stand-in conservative newscaster in some future Purge movie, and so we're going to show you her audition tape a little bit later on if there's time. Before we get to the news, though, I just want to make sure that you understand. Like, a lot of people, like, that do whatever this job that I somehow stumble into, they want you to believe that they are infallible, that their predictions are always right, that their instincts are always right. But I want you to know that I am a complete moron. And the reason for that is, despite being way older than you should need to be to understand this, this last weekend, I went walking on the beach, brainstorming about life and my career, and it didn't seem like a particularly sunny day. But my shoulders are like the surface of Mercury right now. They have been boiled down multiple levels. So you might be wondering, John, why aren't you wearing a jacket? Because even the weight of a simple wool jacket is like irons being pressed on my flesh. And so that's why I'm wearing a t-shirt. I apologize. I'm stupid. Anyway, with that said, why don't we move on? So, Joe Biden's biggest issue in the Democratic primary was always going to be this guy named Joe Biden and all of the things that he's gotten up to over the years. And we knew that, like, the creepy Joe Biden memes and all of that, those were going to come back during the primary. And now there's new allegations of creepy behavior. And so I want to break it down and give you some different people's perspective on what this means for the primary going forward. So first, the facts. A former Nevada state legislator named Lucy Flores wrote a personal essay the New York Magazine published back last Friday, in which she describes an encounter with Biden at a 2014 campaign event. Flores says the then vice president came up behind her, touched her shoulders, and kissed the back of her head. The behavior, she says, wasn't criminal, but it made her feel uncomfortable. And just a couple of days after Lucy Flores' account, Amy Lapos, a former congressional aide who recalls Biden rubbing noses with her at a 2009 fundraiser, similarly says the incident, quote, wasn't sexual, but also that there's absolutely a line of decency and, quote, a line of respect that Biden crossed. And look, there have been obviously many other instances of this. If you look online, people have put together different shots of him touching people or little video montages. In some of those cases, the women in those pictures have come out and said that the photo is taking the situation out of context and they didn't feel uncomfortable. But in other situations, the women do say that they feel uncomfortable. What they want to come out of that might differ. And even in these two cases, we do have that with Lucy Flores very much wants an apology. She wants to talk to Biden. He has sort of addressed this kind of around the edges and said, like, the same thing basically that many of his defenders are saying, is that he has always been this way. It's not sexual. He's just oddly affectionate with people in a lot of different circumstances. And sometimes it looks kind of bad. Sometimes it looks really bad. And again, I want to go back to the point at the beginning. This was always going to come up. And I have to wonder, like, I know some people are responding to these new allegations coming out as, like, this is an oppo research dump, which is a great way of putting bad news for a candidate. But I wonder, like, Biden could have announced a week ago or a month ago or 3 months ago. I mean, other people did. And so I have to wonder, is it possible that Biden is curious how much of this will come out and how much damage it will do? Is it possible that he is waiting to see if he should announce based on how much pushback he gets for the things that, again, we all knew were going to come up? The creepy Joe Biden stuff is, like, I would say, neck and neck with the weird racial remarks stuff from Joe Biden in the past as two things that we know there's a long documented history of that were likely to come out. And so it remains to be seen now, how much does it actually bother people? How much, how much pushback against a potential candidacy will this actually lead to? So, look, Nancy Pelosi says, I don't think that this disqualifies him from being president. Not at all. But she does say that she feels Biden should apologize, which in terms of criticism, that's as light as a criticism could possibly be, that he should apologize. Obviously, if you make someone uncomfortable, you should apologize. That really doesn't mean much in practice. Now, I know that a strategy in the media recently, since Lucy Flores' account has come out at least, is that if you are another primary contender and if you appear on CNN or MSNBC, they are going to ask you, does this disqualify Joe Biden from running? I saw in the Face the Nation appearance over the weekend of Bernie Sanders, he got that question. And they all basically say the same thing. It'll be up to the voters to decide because pragmatically, yes, that's the only way that it's going to work. He's not actually going to be barred from running from any of these accounts and likely from any that might come up. But it is going to be interesting to see, does this actually drop his support in various, you know, demographic groups in this primary? Now, what they're trying to do when they ask Bernie Sanders that, I believe they've done it with others as well, is they're trying to generate drama. They want either Bernie or whoever. This really isn't about Bernie in this case. This is about access to candidates. They want them to say, no, he shouldn't be allowed to run. And of course, they're not going to say that because then they would be pitched as an extremist that's trying to avoid a difficult primary. It's generating clicks, basically, is what they're trying to do. And others, I think, are jumping in from various points of view to do that exact same thing. So Sean Hannity had an op-ed on Fox News about Joe Biden where he said this. Will the Democratic Party hold Joe Biden to the same, quote, believe all women zero tolerance standard that they have utilized so vigorously against Republicans? And by the way, where are all the Judge Kavanaugh I believers? So a standard trick of the right wing is pretend that there is hypocrisy that isn't there. I have not heard many people saying Lucy Flores is lying or, you know, Amy is lying or any of these women. And how could we? You can literally see the footage of many of these types of incidents. The question is, what should be done based on it? And so, look, does Joe Biden have a chance in the primary? I think that this could actually hurt him quite significantly. And if a person feels like whether he thinks what he was doing all of these times was sexual or not, I don't like it. Who am I to tell that person that they're wrong? But we do also have to understand that the rubbing noses or kissing on the back of the head is a little bit different than what was alleged against Brett Kavanaugh. I think that everybody understands that there are gradations of this, and attempting to rape someone is different than rubbing noses with them. I think that we all agree that. I think that Sean Hannity on some level understands that, but he's trying to score points. That's all that is. And he is willing to once again use the very serious topics of sexual harassment and sexual assault to try to score cheap political points, while again, totally unnecessarily minimizing the concern of those who felt maybe we shouldn't have a guy who might have tried to rape people on the Supreme Court. So that's another pawn that he's using right there. But then you get into even more ridiculous territory. So just briefly, this is one person, but I've seen this all over Twitter and in op-eds. Mika Brzezinski, I believe it was yesterday, said, is it okay to bring up that this could be politically motivated? And what she is saying there's different versions of this, but the idea is that that one of these women is a big Bernie person. And so are they just pretending that this happened or that it happened and they're pretending that they're offended to hurt Bernie Sanders? This is where Bernie Sanders actually does come in. Before it wasn't important, but here it is. That is the sort of hypocrisy that Sean Hannity is pointing out there that doesn't generally exist, but in some cases does. If you will believe women, unless it might hurt a candidate that you like, then you don't really believe women. You believe women when it's convenient. That's not any sort of laudable standard right there. And if Lucy Flores or if Amy Lapos or if any of these other women felt uncomfortable, first of all, they should not be made even more uncomfortable by having them revealing what happened to them. In some cases, things that they've grappled with for literally years, they should not be made to feel stigmatized because they're bringing that up. Again, that doesn't mean that Biden drops out of the race, that we don't have a primary, that we just crown one candidate right now. But they get to bring up the experiences that they've had, whether it's with Biden or with any other candidate. We talked not too many months ago about the allegations that some people believe that Bernie Sanders didn't discipline someone who had sexually harassed a campaign worker quickly or severely enough. What's interesting is that the sum total of these stories, regardless of who the allegations are against, from a certain perspective in the media, always ends up that Bernie should be the one that actually drops out. So if Biden made these women uncomfortable, is that bad news for Biden or is it bad news for Bernie in the end? Anyway, look, you need to understand what actually happened. It's up to you to decide how serious it is. This is not one of the issues where I feel it's my job to attempt to convince you. But you also need to understand that whether it's Sean Hannity or Mika Brzezinski or whoever, there are people who are coming at this not from a genuine concern for the experiences of women, but to try to shape the primary in the direction they want. It's as simple as that. We're going to take a short break. We come back. Author Vicky Ward is going to be here to break down Kushner, Inc. We're going to try to learn a little bit about the secretive pair, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
More than 2 years into the Trump presidency, we've gotten to know quite a bit about the cast of characters in the White House, but a few have remained very much in the shadows, and Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, I think, are two of the best examples of that. It's been 2 years, but we still don't know that much about them or why they're in the White House at all. And joining us now to help break it down, author and investigative journalist Vicky Ward, author of Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption. Vicky, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you, John.
Very glad to have you here. And I'm curious, why did you decide to engage in this multi-year process of investigating specifically Jared and Ivanka? What made them your targets?
Yeah, so I sort of saw the signs early on that they were perhaps not what we all thought they were, what we all hoped they would be, right? I think that a lot of people thought that they would be kind of a moral center, a moderating force on a president, you know, known for his extreme character and his extreme policies. But, you know, I knew a little bit about the world they came from. My last book was about the world of New York real estate. And I knew about the cultures that came from that is very disdainful of rules. And there were signs, you know, when the moment that Ivanka flashed up her bangle, you know, she remembered the during the transition, mm-hmm. 60 Minutes interview. The next day, everyone was told they could buy a $10,000 bangle. And something about that really felt wrong. And although her brand apologized at the time, as someone in the transition later said to me, you can't unsee it. And then the story that broke just before the inauguration about Jared, the fact that he had been meeting in the first weekend of the transition with the Chinese, a big Chinese insurance company whose chairman right now is in jail for life, actually, to try and save this troubled building, this like financial albatross around the Kushner family's shoulders. And he'd been doing that at the same time as he was hosting the Chinese government on behalf of the transition at Kushner Company's headquarters. And it was that kind of behavior. And then, you know, when I started seeing Ivanka meet with like the Chinese Premier Xi, and suddenly China gave her company all these trademarks. You know, it was those, and suddenly we learned that Jared had omitted all these meetings from his security clearance forms. That's when I thought, I've got to start digging.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Look, it seems like the three subtitles to your book, Greed, Ambition, Corruption, it seems like while they've been there, they have certainly been enriching themselves in a number of different ways. And it's possible, I guess, that that's one of the reasons that they were installed in the White House in the first place. But I am curious, the odd level of trust and responsibility that Donald Trump places on them, for instance, putting Jared Kushner in charge of virtually every project, are they just there to enrich themselves and the families, or does Donald Trump actually believe that they can be trusted or qualified to be top-level aides like they are?
Well, look, Trump has run a family business, all right? I mean, both Jared and Ivanka grew up in family real estate businesses. And so, I mean, this is what you're seeing. I mean, you know, the White House is being run like a business. And I think that sort of we as journalists need to really cover it like that and not in a traditional way. But I also think that, you know, I know from my reporting, it wasn't so much that Trump put Jared in charge of everything. It was that Jared took everything. I mean, Rex Tillerson's mm-hmm. great mistake was that he actually thought that just because he had the job title Secretary of State, that meant that he was Secretary of State. But it was Jared who wandered in and said, I'm taking the Middle East. And before he knew it, Rex Tillerson was horrified to sort of discover that it was Jared pushing for the first official visit to be, to of all places, Saudi Arabia, not a place that shares democratic values with us. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and then Rex Tillerson and Mattis that were cut out of Jared's communications, as we now know, with the Saudi Crown Prince and with all the other leaders in the region, which is why they had no idea that then this country, Qatar, which has an American air base, but is a rival of Saudi Arabia's, was then blockaded. And that's when Tillerson and Mattis really got alarmed by Jared, because it became very, very dangerous for our national security. I think that the interesting question is, how much of this does Trump actually know about Jared's meddling? That is not clear. I mean, Trump, for example, did not even know that Qatar had an airbase. Okay.
Does he know that it's a country?
Well, you know, I mean, that, you know, so, you know, this is a problem. You have a lot of people who are, they're very arrogant and entitled, because that's how they've been raised. And they don't, you know, Jared Kushner was not someone who was in the weeds when he was running his family real estate business. And I think this is what you see, right? You see this culture of people who can't be bothered with the details. Trump not reading his intelligence briefings. Mm-hmm. And that's really dangerous.
I agree. So, look, we've talked a little bit about the transition and how they sort of took these jobs onto themselves. But over the last 2 years, I've seen so many cycles of Trump loves and trusts them, Trump hates them, Trump wants them there, Trump tried to push them out. It's like, are eggs healthy for you? It just switches every 6 months or so. So I'm curious, you've talked with well over 100 people, I think, interviewing them.
220.
So does he still trust and value them there, or are they just lingering there on their own for their own purposes? How influential do they remain in the White House?
Look, he will stick by them. I mean, you use the word, it's the right word, cycles. It does go in waves. But nothing bothers the president more than when people other than him, including Jared and Ivanka, bring him bad press. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so he was really, really annoyed, for example, about the story about their misuse of emails, because that's what he'd gone after Hillary Clinton with. Really, really upset. And that's why I report in the book, at one point he asked John Kelly to just get rid of him, but then he couldn't pull the trigger. So, you know, my guess is that right now they're safe. They will use executive privilege to try and dodge these questions about their security clearances. That's what I've been told, that all these documents were sent over to Robert Mueller for his investigation. So now they can all claim that all the security clearance documentation is privileged. So until, you know, and even if they then subpoena John Kelly, he could argue executive privilege. So, until they become a liability for Trump, he's going to stick with them. But if they become a liability, I think you'll see that he won't hesitate.
Okay, well, we will certainly be watching, and perhaps that will generate a sequel to your book. Vicki Ward, we want to thank you for joining us on the show today. The book is Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, the Green New Deal getting talked about quite a bit on Fox News recently. Can you guess how they address the topic? We'll break that down after this. So there are a lot of ways that if you did not agree with the Green New Deal, if you didn't think that we need to do something serious about climate change, there's a lot of different ways that you could try to get that across. But many of them are as yet unexplored. The right seems to have two strategies. One is attacking the messengers. Two is lying about what's in the plan. And Tucker Carlson is a big fan of both of these strategies. And because last Friday, Chris Hayes had a town hall on the Green New Deal with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, as well as others, he's going to engage in some of this strategizing. So first, here's a screenshot from Tucker Carlson's recent show about that. Green New Deal, our only hope for survival. And if you just look at that, you might come away thinking, oh, he's going to seriously address this topic. And also, man, he really can't have a photo taken without a weird look on his face. But no, he's talking about Chris Hayes there. Not about Chris Hayes' argumentation, but he wants to attack Chris Hayes specifically for, like, physical characteristics and his ideology in relation to women for some reason. Had nothing to do with the town hall, but this is what Tucker Carlson had to say. Chris Hayes is what every man would be if feminists ever achieved absolute power in this country. Apologetic, bespectacled, and deeply, deeply concerned about global warming and the patriarchal systems that cause it. Now that, accidentally, that's the deepest thing that Tucker Carlson has ever said, but not for any of the reasons he wanted it to be. The reason it's deep is because a lot of people looked at that and thought, I know that he's trying to insult him, but I don't think that he actually is. So, first of all, apologetic. I don't know what in that town hall Chris Hayes was supposedly apologizing for. Maybe he's apologizing to future generations about our lack of action on climate change. I don't know. That seems warranted. He's bespectacled. Like, if feminists get power, they're going to make us wear Warby Parkers? I don't understand what the criticism is. What are you talking about? And I love the idea that, like, he's got a big audience. There's a lot of uniformly older white male people watching him laughing. Some of them are wearing spectacles and they're laughing. Yeah, he's not a man because he's not going through his day with worse vision than he needs to for some reason. And then also deeply, deeply concerned about global warming and the patriarchal systems that cause it. Now, that's the Tucker Carlson recipe right there. There's nothing about the patriarchal system that they were talking about right there. I think that's a perfectly valid thing to talk about and to think about, but that's not what Chris Hayes is talking about either on his show night after night or during that town hall either. But he is deeply concerned about global warming, and just being concerned about that to Tucker Carlson is both a joke and something that you would have to be being prompted by a woman to believe that. Makes absolutely no sense, but bear in mind, Tucker Carlson is the thinking man's conservative. Is any of that, facts don't care about your feelings, is any of that logic and, like, I'm just going to make an argument, I'm going to craft it, and it will be indisputable. No, it's just making fun of Chris Hayes because he wears glasses. I guess he could have gotten LASIK, he's got the money, maybe he likes wearing glasses, I don't know. Why did you wear bow ties for years, Tucker? Nobody understands that. But you chose to brand yourself as a person who wears bow ties. It's perfectly fine, it works for some people, Bill Nye looks cool in them. It didn't work for you, and the only thing worse than you wearing them was that you were shamed on TV about wearing them, so you stopped wearing them. Dude, if you're gonna wear something, commit to it. Every time someone tells me, John, stop wearing mesh tank tops, I buy another mesh tank top. I'm not backing up at this point. That's what being a man is. But Tucker doesn't understand that. And here's the thing. Tucker has a very weird relationship with women and with masculinity. What you need to understand about Tucker is what you need to understand about virtually every man right of center in this country. At the base level, below all of their political values, political preferences, political policies, all of it, is deep concern that someone will imply that they're not manly enough. That's all it is. That's why they're so obsessed with cucks and cucking and being cucked and all of that. They're really worried that someone is going to take their woman and imply that they're not a good man. And so that's why he continually lashes out in this way. You know what I think is manly? Not caring about what other people think about your manliness and defining it for yourself based on the values that you hold. But for him, no. It should be generated by people like Tucker Carlson, a guy who I don't want to go as low as he goes, but I will say that this is a guy who has never had a genuine conversation, never had an authentic relationship based on personality in his life. He is an heir. Every dollar he has is generated by his heir status, both the direct money that was handed to him by his family and also the jobs he got, not because he was qualified, but for decades because of the connections he had. That's why he's on TV right now. It's not to say that he doesn't have any skills. He does have a skill. He knows what white supremacists want to hear, and he delivers it to them every single night on his program. That's his skill, and it's a very monetizable one in the modern day. But when it comes to women, which do you honestly prefer? Do you prefer a bespectacled Chris Hayes who talks about global warming and apparently got very good ratings for it? Or do you prefer a guy who says things like this? No, actually, men don't need to be more sensitive. You just need to be quiet and kind of do what you're told. Or maybe she seems extremely, I'm not going to say it, it's a British thing, it starts with a C, you know what he said. That's what he says. And he says, I love women, but they're extremely primitive, they're basic, they're not that hard to understand. Now, I know what you're thinking, yes, that's an insult against women, but he doesn't seem to despise them as much as he despises Iraqis, that's true. But they're both in the category of bad types of people from his point of view. So, look, I think there's a reason that you never see women talking about how much they love Tucker Carlson. It's not designed for women. It's designed for people who look and act and think exactly like Tucker Carlson. But that hostility to women, that did also manifest in attacking Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So Chris Hayes has his town hall. AOC is there. She's, after all, the person pushing the Green New Deal. The actual architect of the policy was also there. And here's what he had to say about AOC. Again, Tucker Carlson has millions of people who watch his show every day. He has a big staff, production, and all of that. If anyone has the ability and resources to dissect the Green New Deal and take it down on the merits, Tucker Carlson could do that, hypothetically. Instead, this is what he gave to his audience. So it's official. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a moron and nasty and more self-righteous than any televangelist who ever preached a sermon on cable access. She's not impressive. She's awful. So first of all, yes, I want to hear more about self-righteousness from Tucker Carlson, but she is awful and a moron and nasty. So you get a bit of that nasty woman thing that the right has been pushing for a couple of years. And again, this is a guy who is respected on the right for being able to take down leftists with razor-sharp wit and argumentation. She's a moron. That's what he said to Rutger Bregman, the economist that made him look so silly in his interview that they didn't actually even air it. This is the best that he actually has. The problem is not that he's ill-equipped to actually convince people on the merits against this policy, but that he doesn't have to. The bar is below the ground. Everybody watching Tucker Carlson's show already agrees with him on this. They don't need to be told why they shouldn't support the Green New Deal or why they shouldn't support AOC. They just need to be told that she's some sort of insult. They want to see someone attacking her. That's what they want. That's what they tune in for. God, we are partisan people. Now, on AOC's part, she had some insults being thrown around during the actual Green New Deal town hall, and here's how she addressed one of them in real time.
So is it possible that we say, listen, climate change is the thing that we're seeing the whites of its eyes, we've got to act now. Can we come back maybe to universal basic income a little bit later?
That's unacceptable, and that's the difference between me and Trump.
Yeah, that's good. I appreciate that.
I disagree slightly with the congresswoman. I think that is the least of the differences between her and Trump, but it is a difference. She was surrounded, I have to assume, by a crowd that is probably at least somewhat favorable towards her and the Green New Deal, but she was still willing to say, no, that's unacceptable because they yelled moron at that former Republican congressman. She's willing to do that. And that is something. Now, we had been talking before the show, Brooke and I, about how she also said that Republicans had made fools of themselves, which I agree with Brooke, is insulting Republicans. And I think we both agree that it's objectively true that they did make fools of themselves. And the thing is, it might seem like because I defend that, but I'm attacking Tucker Carlson for calling her a moron, that I'm being a hypocrite. I don't think that I am. It would be hypocritical for me to applaud that sort of name-calling and then say, and that's why I am the arbiter of all that is rational and logical. I don't. I'm stupid. You shouldn't listen to me. But Tucker Carlson really does want you to believe that he is the smartest man on television. He certainly seems to believe it himself. I am only smart enough to know that what I think doesn't really matter. But anyway, I think that she's right there. She also tweeted, when someone called a former Republican congressman a moron at our televised town hall, I shut it down immediately because I believe our policies can win on merit and can be improved with productive discourse. You know, we're winning when the GOP resort to vapid personal insults. And there's nothing I would like more in the world than to get back to discussing climate change and possible ways to address that threat based on the merits, based in the policy, and that's generally what we do. But when there is this ongoing campaign against people like either on the political side, AOC, or on this particular issue, someone like Chris Hayes, I do think that we cannot allow those attacks to simply go unanswered. And so that's why I felt it was worth covering on the show today. There was so much more we unfortunately couldn't get to. It'll probably be on tomorrow's show. We do have to take a break, though, because when we come back from this, Ken Klippenstein is going to be joining us. He's been doing more Freedom of Information Act requests. And this is going to make me sound like a nerd, but that's always fun after this. There are a few words that I don't like saying on this program. Recently, there was a British slang that starts with the letter C that I didn't want to say. Two others are Jacob and Wool. And the only reason I'm saying them at all is because Ken Klippenstein is making me. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry to make you say that word.
Ken Klippenstein of TYT Investigates. So you have been doing more Freedom of Information Act requests, and the most recent one does have to do with the Jacob Wool. So tell us about this. What's going on?
So I requested records from the FBI under the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA for short, and the firm that I requested was called Surefire Intelligence. This was a firm tied to Wall that produced fraudulent claims of sexual misconduct against Robert Mueller. And Wall ended up doing a press conference to where he distributed a dossier of these, you know, false allegations. And the dossier was apparently created by Surefire. And what I heard back from the FBI was that there's an ongoing law enforcement investigation into Surefire, suggesting that the FBI is investigating, Wool's company.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because at the time when that whole thing blew up in his face, doing no lasting damage because awful people never have any consequences in the modern era, it certainly seemed like he had been breaking some sort of law. And so there is a possibility that he could be facing some sort of legal action, although at present it sounds like we're not able to get any more information about that.
Yeah, the FBI and law enforcement agencies generally tend to hold these things pretty close to the chest when they're conducting an investigation, because they don't want, you know, it to be interrupted. People can, you know, people might go into hiding, people might try to avoid interviews, things like that. But it does seem to suggest that there is one ongoing. And I think it's kind of an interesting case, because we saw one just in Chicago with the Smollett case, very similar, very similar allegations. Supposedly he fabricated claims against individuals that he had been attacked. And that's sort of, you know, kind of like a mirror. And it's kind of interesting that this, you know, African-American individual became such a huge story. And then when Wool did it, you know, people like us sort of laughed about it, but I don't think it got anywhere near the same amount of ire that the Smollett case did.
Yeah, you bring up some really questionable things that he's done. I don't think that we should let, you know, slip by that he had a fake bodyguard at one of his press conferences with an earbud in his ear pretending that he was like Secret Service or something. I think he should be thrown in jail for that as well. But so I'm curious, what made you file the FOIA request about Surefire Intelligence in the first place?
Often when I do FOIA, I get tips. FOIA is a nice tool because you don't have to rely on anonymous sources. But in this case, I just saw all the incredible claims coming, being produced by Surefire Intelligence, where they were literally paying or trying to pay women to fabricate these allegations against Mueller. So I thought, oh boy, there's got to be something there. And then when Mueller's spokesperson said that they had referred the matter to the FBI, you know, then I knew, oh, I have to see if there's something here. And so that's kind of what compelled me to do the request.
And you might be onto something, and I'm hoping that people spread your new story, which is available on 2IT's website, because I do think that people should be continuing to follow this up. I don't want him to be one of the, like, right-wing fake investigative grifters that are allowed to continually lie and have no consequences. And so my next question, I guess this is less me asking you as a TYT Investigates reporter and more as a person who sure. gets what's going on online. Is he being taken seriously still after all of the different times that he's owned himself and sent himself death threats and all of that? Is he considered a serious figure still, at least by some people?
I don't think he is by a lot of people, but I think it's a mistake to write him off, because we should remember, you know, some of the most powerful demagogues started out as total clowns that, you know, no one took seriously. I mean, you know, Alex Jones and InfoWars might be one example, someone we all laughed at for years, and then they got a press, you know, they got press pass to the White House. People like, you know, Mike Cernovich. These are guys that definitely have, like, comical, you know, qualities. But I don't think that's, you know, mutually exclusive from them being dangerous or being able to, you know, fan the flames of, you know, fear and confusion that are characteristic of the era in which we live.
Yeah, I certainly agree. That is my concern. And that's why generally, unless it's really necessary, I don't like to talk about him at all. But it just occurred to me, and I'm curious what you think about this. Of all, like, I despise him because of what he represents as an individual and in terms of where our culture is going. But I wonder if, is there anyone who hates him more than the Project Veritas guy that I can't remember? Because he really has taken over his niche, hasn't he?
Oh, is there a turf war going on between them? I didn't know that.
I don't know. I haven't actually looked into this, but, like, he was the guy that would make up these fake investigations that would amount to nothing, but it wouldn't matter because nothing matters. And now Jacob Wohl has sort of taken over that real estate.
Yeah, I always thought that guy, I got to give James O'Keefe, I think his name is, credit for at least making me laugh at, you know, how obvious his disguise. He sort of reminded, it was like Dana Carvey or something, like the master disguise. It was like a white supremacist idea of a black person, because he was always dressed up as a pimp with, like, a cane and thing. And he was just supposed to be some random black. And I remember, do you remember when he went in the Acorn office, there's, like, a black woman sitting there. She just obviously knows something is up, but is politely trying to hear him out. And he's like, oh, we got her. We infiltrated Acorn.
yeah. Unfortunately, the joke was sort of on us, because Acorn was eventually destroyed as a result of that complete sham.
Perfect example, right?
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous, funny, but not, you know, without its threats to democracy, unfortunately.
Exactly. And thankfully, we've got you investigating those threats to democracy. So as always, Ken, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to take a short break. We come back a little bit more time. We're going to be taking a tour around the world and its news in Meanwhile In. Now it's time to find out what's going on outside of the U.S. in Meanwhile In. Meanwhile in Ukraine, their next president might literally be a comedian, and that's no joke. With just over half of the ballots counted early on Monday, Volodymyr Zelensky had 30.2% of the votes. The incumbent president, Petro Poroshenko, was in a distant second place with 16.6%, followed by former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko at 13%. And so this vote could see a comedy actor with no political experience move a step closer to becoming the country's next president. Very briefly, the substance, I don't have the time or the expertise to break down the various positions of all of the candidates, but despite the fact that this guy is a comedian and has no political experience, he seems far more reasonable on the issues than a number of the other candidates running in that race, including some who are just out and out far right, either white nationalists or state nationalists, or very problematic for a number of different reasons. This is not a done deal, but he seems preferable to some of the alternatives. And also, if anyone in the U.S. looks at what's going on in the Ukraine and says, those fools, they're electing someone from TV to be their president, glass houses and all that. They exist both in the Ukraine and the U.S. Meanwhile, in... Meanwhile, we may have to update our Mars B-roll, because they're not just going to have rovers soon, they're going to have a helicopter too. which is bizarre, but apparently true. So they're going to have both a new rover and a small little flying drone, and they want to test the capabilities of this new helicopter. So they had an engineering team behind the mission remove all of the nitrogen, oxygen, and other gases from inside a space simulator and injected it with carbon dioxide to, as close as they can, mimic the Martian atmosphere. They also try to do that with gravity, too. And then they flew this drone around, which sounds like good science and a good time. That just sounds like fun. And so this next mission, Mars 2020, it's seeking to answer key questions about the habitability of Mars, not only in the past, but also in preparation for the arrival of human settlers. The ground-based rover is going to drill and collect rock and soil samples on Mars's surface and then keep them in a cache for future retrieval. I'm assuming for future drones, but also for eventually within the next 15 years or so when humans actually make it there. I do have to say, the more we focus on the day-to-day issues in the U.S. and around the world, it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable to talk about this sort of, exploration throughout the solar system. But I am still a nerd, and I think it's awesome, and I do think that there's a lot that we can learn. I don't think that having some sort of backup option is necessarily a bad thing for our species going forward. But overall, I like big, far-reaching goals like this, I do think are inspirational to the next generation of scientists and engineers. And I do think we need this sort of thing to continue to inspire them. And so if it takes helicopters on Mars, I'm down for that. Meanwhile, in... Meanwhile, in the oceans, for the second time in just 2 weeks, a dead whale has been found chock full of plastic, which is not how they are supposed to come. In the latest grisly discovery off the coast of Sardinia, Italy, late last week, there were roughly 49 pounds of plastic inside a female sperm whale, along with a dead fetus, which had potentially been killed before she was killed due to the contamination, and she was apparently in, the fetus was in a advanced state of decay at that point. So what do you get in your 49 pounds of plastic? Well, you get garbage bags, fishing nets and lines, tubes, a bag of washing machine liquid. And so that's an issue when humans consume that stuff. Also really bad for the whales, too. And this is not a surprise. It's not new, of course. It's happened a number of times. But when we continue to load the ocean up with more and more of our garbage, it is going to have more and more of an effect on the species that inhabit it. And so 49 pounds with this whale, the previous one about 2 weeks ago, had 88 pounds. It is a gigantic problem that we in the U.S. don't really pay attention to, but it is taken seriously in other places. I remember while I was doing my documentary series in the Arctic in a town in Norway, they had a massive sculpture, a life-size sculpture of a whale made entirely out of trash taken from the oceans. This is a serious issue, and we should take it seriously, too. Meanwhile, in... Meanwhile, in New Zealand, the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has been visiting those still recovering from the tragic shootings last month, and I came across a video going around on Twitter of one of these visits, and I wanted to show it to you.
How are you?
I'm
well,
I'm
so sorry, I can't share.
No, no, it's good that you warned me so that I don't create the problem. Thank you for your email.
Much. Thank you very much.
Who wrote it for you?
My friend.
Oh, good. Nice to meet you.
And look, that is beautiful and inspirational, and I guess it shouldn't be. That's a prime minister doing what the leader of a country should do, but our standards are so warped in the U.S. because of how cruel and inhuman our leader tends to be, that just seeing an authentic display of compassion and empathy from a politician, it stands out. And again, it should not, but it does. And so I'm glad that she's doing that. And I also have to note that in the U.S., if a prominent female politician had put on a hijab and gone into that room saying assalamu alaikum, the traditional greeting, they would have been attacked for a week or longer on Fox News. She is just showing respect for the culture. And again, that's another thing that should not be controversial, and I want us to get back to a point where it is not, at least inside of the U.S. The rest of the world doing pretty well in a lot of different ways. Okay, thank you to everybody who's been watching the show. Great to have you here. Tomorrow, Jared Jackson is going to be joining us. We've got lots of great guests and great topics we're going to be talking about throughout the week, so I look forward to seeing you in future episodes. If you haven't already rated and reviewed the podcast, please do that on iTunes, and I will see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.